You're listening to Focus on the Beer, a bi-monthly podcast exploring the craft beer industry. Enjoy the show.
All right, let's start recording. So stop the craziness.
Or I should say, ouch, more like
that. That hurt. That really hurt.
Starting it off with dad jokes.
That fully works.
All right, welcome to Focus on the Beer. I'm Ryan Hannigan.
I'm Josh Howard.
And we're here with Jeff Lockhart from Deuces Wild Brewing. Brewery.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep everything straight these days.
Yeah, I know. Brewing, brewery, brew company, brewing company.
Beer company.
Yeah.
Craft beer.
Beer works.
It's a minefield.
Beer works. Everything's different these days. But we invited Jeff on the show because Deuces Wild, if you hadn't heard, won a gold medal at this year's GABF for their Knuckle Dragger Scotch Ale. Which is pretty cool. We were looking through the past medals for Colorado Springs, and
because we love trivia,
they're in a pretty elite crowd for gold medals. Looks like just Bristol and Trinity are the only other ones to have won a gold medal.
At the Great American Beer Festival. I mean, World Beer Cup's a little different. We've had a couple other World Beer Cup winners too.
I think it was just all Jeff as well.
Didn't Rocky Mountain have a gold for something at World Beer Cup too? I don't know. We're gonna look it up now because
I'll look it up here.
We do our research on the spot. But yeah, just a few words about the Great American Beer Festival this year. For those of you who went, they definitely made some positive changes with going back to the regional format for breweries in the hall. They get people in there real quick. There's no an hour in line wasting your life away. They get you in within 15 minutes, queue you up, and then when the bell sounds, they just release you out in the little corrals. And they had a bunch of food trucks in there. The Jameson thing was back. They had an app this year, and I hesitate to call it an app because it was really just a web sort of thing that you could save to your phone. And I don't think I heard any positive feedback on that. Most people couldn't get it to work.
It's a black hole in there. Why do they have an app?
Right. Yeah. If it's not something that sits on your phone and is stored there so you can access it with no internet access because
they've done that in the past.
It's a black hole there. That's what they should have done. And this year it was this web type thing that you could save the shortcut and it was supposed to save stuff locally to your phone. It didn't work. So I don't think I heard anyone say that they had a good time with it or that it worked for them. So that's something they need to evaluate for next year. But, you know, obviously they learned from last year. Going fully alphabetical didn't work. I really like the layout this year. I think they did a good job. And it was nice to see, you know, aside from Deuces winning and
Red Leg
won the other medal this year. You know, that there were a few Springs breweries pouring. Pike's Peak was there pouring with their vendor for their brew system. So they had a nice little kind of end cap right in the middle of everything. The Veterans Alliance, of course, had a booth there, and they were pouring some beers from the Springs. And, of course, we had last year's medal winners that were at the heavy metal with Cogstone and Red Leg. So
Brass Brewing was there, too.
Yeah, Brass was there, and Atrevida. They were about four booths apart. Because the alphabet's a thing that exists. And it was a really well executed event this year. And the only thing that was a little different, at least on our end, was they had a different PR company that was handling things. So they moved it out of house, and as a result, like for media at least, it was a little more stringent getting in, so a lot of people I was used to seeing at the event weren't really there, but I saw them at the outside events. Like, oh, where are you at? Well, you know, we didn't get in. Oh, so that was a little bit of a change. They were a little more stringent with who they let in for media, which I guess isn't a terrible thing. All in all, nothing but a good time this year at the Great American Beer Festival. But enough about that. Let's get back to Jeff and his award-winning beer.
Go for it.
Oh.
I'm not asking questions.
Oh, you're not? I thought you were interviewing us.
I thought you were looking up World Beer Cup stuff.
I was. It looks like Rocky Mountain won a bunch in 2012 as well.
Yeah. That's the only other one I could think of for World Beer Cup. I mean, I know Cogstone won something, but it wasn't a gold. It was like a bronze or silver. I forget. But enough about them. So you guys won the gold medal for Knuckle Dragger. You want to talk to us about what Knuckle Dragger is, how long you've been brewing it, what your inspirations were, maybe?
Okay, well, inspirations. I just like really nice malty beers, number one. And this one definitely fits that bill. But I've had a Scotch ale on my in my recipe book for years, and I've been brewing it occasionally depending on where we are. But you know, when I came on to Deuce's, Rich really wanted a knuckle dragger, or he wanted a Scotch ale, and it's called knuckle dragger because he was an X2 mechanic, missile mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And they called them knuckle draggers. So all the operators would call the mechanics knuckle draggers. So
gotcha.
Rich was he's a big old knuckle dragger. So,
and honestly, from what I've known of you brewing over the years, you really, really nail nice malty styles. I mean, your stouts have always been really good. Your brown ales have always been favorites of mine. And so I can't say I'm surprised that you won for this, because it's a really well-executed malty beer. Have you ever considered doing like a double of that, like a strong Scotch ale?
No, not until now.
Would you make one for me if I asked you nice?
Maybe.
But not to be demanding or anything.
Yeah. No, I would not be opposed to it. It's just it would be like a, if we did a seasonal something.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe instead of a barley wine this year, we'll do a strong Scotch.
There you go.
And see what happens.
That'd be awesome.
So
Jeff, for the people that don't know you and don't know your experience, how'd you get started in brewing, and where have you been, and where do you see yourself going? Tough questions.
Yeah. Well, it's real easy. I started homebrewing when I first got married, and that's just a coincidence. But we went into one of those home stores, and there was a Mr. Beer kit there.
Yeah.
So we picked it up and tried that, and it was meh. And sorry. And I didn't pursue that until I met a friend at work, and he had a homebrew shop near him that wasn't that far from me either. So I got the big boy kit and started brewing. This is when we lived in Atlanta, and so I started working for Sweetwater about a year after they opened, just volunteering. And eventually they put me on the payroll. I was doing maintenance and all sorts of things, bottling, kegging, keg washing, you know, just the little stuff that a part-timer can do. And then I did that for about 5 years and really wanted to open my own place. And Delta was offering layoffs at the time, and I said, pick me. And so I came out here, and I started a brewery in Canyon City called McClellan's, with the McClellan's. After about 3 years, that was, of not having a paycheck, it gets really rough. So I had to move on from that place, and went and opened the Uray Brewery with Aaron Eddy, who's the owner of Uray Brewery. Had a really good 13 months there. But my wife would not leave Canyon City. She didn't want to live on the West Slope. So had to come back here. I helped Royal Gorge reopen in what was my brewery before.
Right.
Then I went to Shamrock for a while. And then Todd at Red Leg came and found me down there, was opening a production brewery. So I said, yeah, I'll come do it. And so I worked for Todd, I think, 3 years, maybe.
Sounds about right.
And because we had two World Beer Cups, so at least 3 years.
Yeah, that's two. So
yeah, so and then had to leave there, and Deuces Wild was opening up at just the right time for me, and I've been there
onwards
a year and a half now. I have a little piece of it. And I don't think I'm going to be leaving it. So
that's good.
That's probably where I'm going to be.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That fulfills the dream of the ownership.
A little bit, yeah.
but you're not saddled with all of the ownership, or at least
right.
Like half,
yeah.
Of it.
Yeah. I'm not under pressure, right, financially, yeah, for the place. So.
That's the hardest part about brewing.
Just the beer part.
Yeah.
And you guys now just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, opened the the new tap room in the former 1876 brewery as well.
Correct, yeah.
So there's no brewing going on site there. It's simply a tap room. You guys are just shipping kegs.
That's right.
Up to that location.
Yeah, and we'll probably make that little area back where the brewery was into a like a private conference room if people wanted to come in and have a little section
private
where they
meeting
can just
space
talk.
Type of thing. Okay.
Yeah, I saw you just had some shelves with like glassware and pitchers back there right now.
Right now, yeah. There's a lot of stuff back there. If you need any like grain or hops, it's all back there.
I'll let you know. How's the response been to opening up there?
It's been excellent. I was in there grabbing some beers earlier today, and it was pretty full.
That's awesome. Mean,
yeah, it was. It's crazy, and you know, with the food truck over there, it's kind of a dining desert over there.
There's nothing there.
Close by.
Yeah,
and so having the food truck there kind of draws people in.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and then they realize there's a brewery, and hey.
Well, and I don't think 1876 ever had an issue with people getting people there. They were busy all the time. They just kept running out of beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was a small system, and I just don't think they knew what it was going to be like.
That happens.
So, yeah.
Yeah, litany of problems that weren't people showing up at the door.
Yeah, so. It seemed like it was every time I saw pictures of that place, it was busy.
It was packed.
So
yeah.
For you guys, it's like, all right, basically just open the doors with a different name. And yeah.
Well, it was one of the places system. I was looking at to start my own brewery because it's literally a mile, maybe a mile and a half from my house.
Oh, that's great.
And then all of a sudden I see that they've got a sign up, and it's like, ah. Well, I figure something else out.
It happens. But. Yeah, they had their sign up for a long time there before they even opened. So, well, that's great. I mean, it's good news that you guys are doing well there. I think it's a great spot because, like you said, it's a desert there. There's the fast food down on Fillmore.
Then
basically you guys, and then you have to go all the way up to like Union and Academy.
Yeah,
essentially
pretty much.
For the next little spot.
Pretty much.
My brain is burned out.
That's how I was yesterday.
So what?
Let's crack a beer.
What? Yeah,
empty beer glasses.
Let's try the award-winning goodness.
Yes, that's the knuckle dragger.
Let you do the honors. So what? We're coming up on end of October here. What are some things that are going on at Deuces that people should be aware of? And
do you have a pumpkin
any
beer?
Any special tappings or anything like that?
No, I do not have a pumpkin beer.
Non-pumpkin-related.
We just released the Amber Lager for Oktoberfest, but it was it's probably one we'll keep around. It was inspired, I don't know if you guys knew this about me, but my grandmother's uncle was a brewer. He had a brewery in Fairplay.
Oh, fun.
Back in the 1800s.
Oh,
and,
whoa.
Yeah, so it was in my family, and I didn't even know it. So that's it was inspired by his Amber Lager. That he brewed. That's out. We're going to be in. I don't know what we have going on in the next couple months. I really don't. I wish I don't
just
do my research
pretty
on
much.
This. Yeah, I don't do research.
just back there brewing and
yeah.
Devil may care what else is going on.
But you know, we always have food trucks and stuff going on. And if I have a chance, we're going to have a fruited Belgian pale.
Oh, nice.
Coming out. I think we'll probably do something. It's a little late for it, but like strawberry rhubarb, something like that. Figure it out. I mean, you can get strawberries at the grocery store all the time. So
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, and rhubarbs. Well, I don't know what we'll do with that, but we'll figure it out.
They've got aseptic purees for both of those.
Oh yeah,
they do.
Can get.
Yeah.
I know strawberries hard to get to really shine in a beer. You got to add like a lot of
strawberry.
Yeah.
So. I think the rhubarb will enhance just flavors going on in it. So.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what happens with that one.
Yeah, I've had a couple of interesting rhubarb beers lately, and I wish I could remember where it was that I had them. But it's a neat little ingredient, you know, because it adds that nice little tang, you know, a little sour note to it.
So we talked about the knuckle dragger. How many beers did you guys enter in GBF this year?
We entered 4 beers this year.
Okay. So the limit. Is the limit
was,
4?
I think the limit was 5.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But either way, we entered 4. We entered the Hefeweizen, which last year went to the medal round. So I'll find out if it did anything this year, you know, if it got to that round again or not. I entered my Pilsner, which is pre-prohibition style, and my oatmeal stout.
Nice.
So we'll see if any of those did anything or came close. Or
how long does it take to get the score sheets back usually?
You know, they're sending them electronically now, so I imagine probably in the next couple weeks I'll hear something.
Yeah, I'm sure it takes a little bit to scan them.
Yeah, they've got to figure it all out.
Do you get good feedback on those? I mean, I'm assuming it's not a full score sheet, but you at least get a little half sheet with some notes.
Yeah, you get the little 3x6 card or whatever it is.
Okay.
Or, you know, score sheet.
I'm used to judging, but I don't judge a GABF, so I don't know exactly how that differs.
Yeah, it's just a... Anyway, and it's hard to describe on radio.
It's about this big.
Yeah, it's about yay big. So as big as a crawler can.
Okay, so about a half sheet.
Yeah, and you get some feedback. You know, depending on where you are in the lineup, your feedback can be pretty illegible.
You're at the end of the line. It's right. Like,
but, beer 12 of 12, it good, period.
But I've always had good feedback from them. You know, it's always constructive, you know, telling me what I need to fix, if I need to fix something, or, you know, it's almost there, but do this.
How often do you take that criticism to heart and actually change something?
Pretty often, actually. I'll try to tweak something. Now, if it's something like this beer sucks, then yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Or I
should hopefully never get feedback like that.
No, I actually had my Pilsner 1 year. The score sheet actually said this. It said too much flavor. I don't know what that means. I don't know how to take that.
Too much cowbell. It's like, all right.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're like, cool. I'll water it down next time.
If it was too much hop flavor, too much malt flavor, something.
Yeah.
There's got to be another descriptor in there.
Right. Okay.
That's where you just sort of have to go, all right, well, throw this one out.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did, so.
That's crazy.
So a couple of were you able to attend any of the Great American Beer Festival? I'm assuming you went to the award ceremony at least.
No, I didn't go to any of it. I was in a sling, and I wasn't going to be jostled around. Yeah. It didn't seem like a good idea. But I sent Kevin, my assistant brewer, up there, so he got to go up on stage and get the gold medal.
Oh, that's great.
He was sitting. He used to work for Iron Hill as a server. And he was sitting with those guys, and I guess this is the first year in 23 years they didn't medal. So he's sitting.
They usually win all the medals.
I know. And so he was sitting with them, and they're all grousing. They didn't win anything, and he heard Knuckle Dragger come up, and he's like, "Excuse me, guys, I got to go get my medal." And I believe it. He's kind of snarky sometimes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, he looked good up there, getting a medal, looked like a brewer, big beard. Good.
Yeah, I scanned through the pictures, and I don't know him, so okay. I was like, where's Jeff?
Yeah, I could point him out to you. He's the only guy that was probably up there alone. So.
Yeah, well, now that I know that, I'll look back through him, and I'll probably find him.
He's got a little brown jacket on, like suit jacket. So.
Okay.
I'm gonna find it right now.
You'll find it.
Well, a couple additional notes from the Great American Beer Festival. I went to a press conference for every year. Sam Adams does a press conference where they talk about what they're doing, what's going on. They would in previous years do the whole long shot, you know, homebrew competition. Mm-hmm. They did not do that this year. There was no announcement of the long shot stuff. And for the first time since 1984, Jim Cook was not there.
Oh, really?
He was in Germany. So he was not there for the press conference. Instead, they sent Sam Caglione from
Dogfish Head.
And so he was there to talk about the merger. And, you know, he said it was really easy because they had fairly similar cultures. It was easy to come together. They've got some really cool collaborations planned. In fact, Utopias is coming out this week, I think it is, or early next week. So the every odd year they put out the Utopias, the big $300 mm-hmm. or whatever it is, you know, super strong ale that they put out.
That's Kevin.
And awesome. the collaboration they're doing off of that is they're taking the barrels that they aged this batch in, and they're going to do a batch of Worldwide Stout and put in those barrels, and that'll be out probably next fall or something like that. Or no, March. It'll be out in March.
So Utopia's Worldwide Stout.
Yep,
oh,
basically.
Whoa.
So they took the Utopius barrels, and then they're going to put Worldwide Stout in it. So there was this whole discussion about, you know, how they had kind of, you know, traded blows for strongest beer brewed. You know, Sam Adams had it first with Triple Bock, and then the Worldwide Stout came out, and then Sam Adams promptly hit him up with, I forget what the beer was called, but it was stronger than that. And then, of course, now they got Utopius, and that's, you know, a different animal altogether. But it was an interesting discussion to have Sam up there talking about, you know, the whole merger. And so, of course, they had a few minutes for questions. And at the end, so I asked, and you got to kind of have a little context to this. My day job is in mergers and acquisitions. So I asked a question about the merger, and I accidentally let slip the word acquisition. And Sam was kind of like, well, just to be clear, it wasn't an acquisition. The day job filtering into my speech here. My bad. But I asked him, what was the most challenging part of all this? And they said they had to consolidate their distribution footprints. Because in some cases there were, you know, different distribution channels for each of them in different states, and so because of the whole three-tier system, they had to go through and shrink that down to get it to a single channel. So that was a lot of hard work that they needed to do to get everything working on that end. So that was the most challenging bit, and of course they said the easy part was just a similarity in culture. So that was kind of the fun part about that, learning about that. They did a really neat collaboration beer called Collab Beeration with B in highlighted in the text of it, and it was they sourced honey from rooftops in Brooklyn and from Africa and put this into this beer. It was a really good beer, but
interesting.
We will not see it anywhere out here because the only place it's going on tap is at their breweries. So I got, you know, 3 ounces of it. And it was good, but, you know, we'll never see it out our way, unfortunately.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
What else we got from Deuces here?
I brought the Joker IPA.
What's the second one?
I brought you guys an extra one.
Extra Dregger.
The knuckle? Okay.
Yeah. So.
Do you want to, let's drink some IPA.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Never a bad time for IPA. Yeah.
A Joker IPA is good, too.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Because this is, I mean, IPA is not your, like...
No, it's something
first
that
and
I'm...
First foremost, like, thing that you brew.
Right. I drink it more often than anything else. Well, except for Pilsner lately and the Amber Lager. But I've always made maltier IPAs.
Yeah.
Like English style.
Mm-hmm.
So... And I've had many conversations about how that's not an IPA.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's just an English-style IPA.
And that's the thing. People don't get it. There was Left Hand had an English-style IPA that they made a few years back that I thought was really good. Most people are like, it's too malty. I don't get it. It's not an IPA. Not hoppy enough. And because English hops don't present with those big citrus notes that people are used to, they don't make it anymore at Left Hand. So it's... Yeah, it's difficult. It's a hard sell for the American palate and much more so for the modern palate where everything is juicy, fruity, you know, kind of sweet even.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, this is definitely not on the malty side. It's more hoppy side.
No, yeah. And I've, you know, as long as I've been brewing, I took cues from Josh at Cerberus on that because he makes some really good IPAs. And just started adding a lot more hops than I would normally add. And, you know, different hops.
Does it feel weird doing it?
Sometimes, yeah.
You're like, what
like wow, jeez.
That's a lot of hops.
I am over-hopping this. What am I doing?
They use a lot of hops over there at Cerberus.
They use a lot of hops.
It's got a lot of nice grapefruit, pine. I mean, it's definitely West Coast-y IPA.
Thank you, yeah. That was the intent. Glad it came through. But I don't know if you guys had that in a hazy India Pale Lager that we did.
The Eternal Triad?
Yeah, yes. That was excellent. Yeah. Love that beer.
That was the most hops I've put into any beer. And just the dry hop was 33 pounds of hops in 10 barrels. No.
It's crazy because I hear that and I go, oh, yeah, 3 pounds per barrel. Yeah, that's about...
Yeah.
Like, you see these breweries like Weldworks and some of the places out in New York and in Chicago, and they're doing like 33 pounds. That's like their normal IPA.
Yeah.
Then you get to their like double dry hopped and their triple dry hopped, and they're putting 100-150 pounds of hops in like a 10-barrel batch.
Yeah.
Like it's like absurd and sort of like obscene how much they are actually putting in the beer. And there is that argument of how much can you actually taste.
Right.
Where does human perception stop? And then it's just like, it's sort of like the IBU wars of the 90s, where everyone was trying to put more IBUs in their beer.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of at that same point right now. It's like, oh, we have 10 pounds per barrel of hops. It's like, well, how much can you actually taste of that?
Yeah, we've kind of gone from the, you know, so bitter it's like drinking hop tea, to now so green and chlorophyll-y that you get that hop burn on them, you know, too fresh for their own good. There's definitely ways to overreach on both ends of that spectrum.
And that was one of the biggest things I saw coming out of GABF is that people, you know, they see the winners of like the new categories, the hazy IPA and the double hazy IPA and the session hazy IPA. You see the winners from that. Weldworks won a bunch of things for their hazy stuff this year. But a lot of the big names that are like the most sought after, you don't see them there. And I think it's because it's subjective, but then it's also, you know, you can this thing and you send it into a competition, and especially when you're dealing with that many hops in a can,
shelf stability becomes an issue.
Yeah,
exactly.
That would be a big concern there.
Yeah, it's really tough, and it's sort of sad to see these, you know, the some of the categories that I feel almost take more skill not have as many entries.
Right.
Like I watched the Brewing Network live feed. I didn't go to GABF this year. It's the first year in like 10 years I haven't been there. But I watched the part of the live feed, and some of these categories, you're like, how are there only like 30 entries in this category, and there's like 300 in the IPA categories?
Well, everybody likes IPA.
I know.
and I think to some extent too, like some of the more technically difficult, like lagers, for instance, you know, doing a good lager is
tough,
hard. Yeah, and I think that there are some people who look at their stable of beers and say, you know, that's probably not going to hold up as well. You know, we've got better beers that we brew.
I thought you were going to say that American brewers are lazy.
No, I would never say that.
Shame on you.
Have I said that before?
Yeah, I feel like you've said that before. No, I feel like we've covered that in talking about like the lagers versus, you know, a dry hopped IPA,
right?
Because you can
ale is definitely easier, and you know, takes up less time in your tank. I mean, it's more profitable, certainly. So it's probably not probably not lazy. It's probably economics. I mean, if you can't devote tank space to a lager for the time that it needs, you're either turning out diacetyl bombs, or you're, you know, rushing them out, and even then they're not good.
Right.
Well, and then on that, I mean, if you look at like these triple dry hopped IPAs, where do you lose the cost? Where's the cost benefit? Is that the term?
Yeah.
Where does it go away? You know, where you spent, $15 a six pack, but you can only sell it for, you know, $10 a six pack or $12 a six pack. You know, where does that?
It's kind of like the Costco rotisserie chicken. It's $5.99. They're probably losing money on it.
Yeah.
But on your way to get back to that chicken, you're going to put $100 other stuff
basket,
in your account.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's, you know, like Weldworks, their best-selling beer, their profit maker is their Hefeweizen.
Yep.
That's the thing that keeps them in business. It lets them do all this other crazy stuff,
mm-hmm.
which blows my mind, but good on them. You know, if they can turn out these crazy, crazy beers like a barrel-aged hot sauce taco gosa, like they were pouring at GABF, which I tried. It was interesting.
They had the spaghetti one last year.
Yeah,
that they were serving with cheese pizza.
Yeah,
which was interesting. Spaghetti goza, and then they served a cheese pizza. And so basically, what you did is you ate the cheese pizza, and then you drank the beer, and it tasted like SpaghettiOs, like you're eating spaghetti and marinara sauce. It was crazy, but it was good. It was interesting. And if they're able to do that by selling a ton of their Hefeweizen, which is an awesome Hefeweizen,
it is. Yeah, it's it's as good as Jeff's.
The banana hammock is pretty darn good, though.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't like.
I'm not going to say one is better.
I don't like Hefeweizens too. So
yeah, they're not my favorite style either.
The banana gets to me.
I'm not a big fan of the banana Estrom. I'm right there with you on that one. But I think Jeff's is really good. I think yours, from what I've had, it is really well balanced. You get the banana and clove really, really well balanced, which I appreciate. I don't like that banana ester at all. If it, in my druthers, it'd be mostly clove with this little hint of banana, but
yeah,
not everyone else is going to like that. People love that banana flavor, so more power to them. You know, don't brew to me, brew to the people who love the beer.
The amount of times that I've gotten presents from relatives where they give me the banana bread beer.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, this looked really good. It's like...
A little too much.
Yeah. I don't think I can do this.
It's kind of
stashed in the fridge.
It's kind of how I feel about most pumpkin beers, because people don't mean pumpkin beer; they mean pumpkin spice beer.
Yeah. Right.
So,
Jeff Ehrman posted an interesting question to a beer group here, where he said, "Describe the taste of pumpkin flesh, not pumpkin beer. What does pumpkin taste like?" And yeah, people were pretty much like, "It doesn't taste like much of anything." Technically correct. You know, I mean, it's hard to make it show up in a beer unless you caramelize the crap out of it, and then you're just tasting caramelized sugar, which you could really get from anywhere. But yeah, when people say that, they want pumpkin spice.
So, and tons of
it.
Not a fan of that either.
The only one that I like that consistently comes out is Bristol's pumpkin ale.
Yeah,
and that's because you actually see the process. You see them roast the pumpkins over an open flame, like they are roasted, so you get a little bit of that roasted flesh.
Do they still call it Venitucci now because of the change?
It's still called Venitucci. Okay. The farm is under a sort of a weird spot right now.
Yeah, I've heard. I don't know the status of it.
The CU Quad program is doing a feasibility study on what it would take to keep it going.
I see.
So they're doing like a year or 2 year long study on it, basically just seeing if it's
sustainable.
Okay. And they're still, I think, working on that. So for the time being, Bristol gets the pumpkins from Milburger Farms down in Pueblo. Brings up a huge truckload of them, and they spend a day. They did a day last week where they all, you know, all hands on deck. Everyone guts and cuts pumpkins and then roasts them.
I saw they had to delay the release of it, too, this year for some reason.
I don't know what happened, but, yeah, it got pushed back. It's next week, I think. It's the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
So it's next Saturday, which is great. They used to do it on a Thursday, which is weird, because they would release it on a Thursday, but they would ship it to stores on that Monday before the Thursday. So you had a lot of people that are like, well, I just got this at the store last night. And even though they embargoed it and told the stores not to put it out, it's going to inevitably make it out. So now they've switched it to a Saturday, so that then it goes to the stores on Monday, which makes a little more sense, makes it seem a little bit more... special. But that's one where they've really sort of taken a lighter hand on the spices. It's not this just like pumpkin spice latte type thing.
But they've been all over the map on it, because there were some times like back in the, you know, early 2000s or, you know, early 2010s where it was,
well, and
they were hitting it hard
too.
So
a lot of that was part of the they've actually used about the same amount of spices every year. I was talking to Chris, their head brewer, about it, and he said we've used basically the same amount of spices. What changes is the spice company, so where they're getting the cinnamon from, and so the cinnamon spiciness changes.
Okay.
But then also the pumpkin. You know, you get a good year where the pumpkins have a lot of juice in them, and they caramelize more, and you get more of that charred sugar flavor coming through. And then there's years where it's maybe a drier year, and the pumpkins are not as ripe, and the flavor, they don't get much from them, and so then the spice, you know, throws it all out of whack.
That makes sense.
Okay. And at that point, you really don't know until the beer comes out, because you're putting this, you know, this raw ingredient. It's been charred, but it's basically this raw ingredient where you don't really know how it's going to be until you, you know, let the fermentation happen and then taste it and go, all right, well, I guess we're going to have a spicier one.
Yeah. Next time. You assume you're getting X, but at any point it could be X minus 5, X plus 5, you name it.
Yeah, and so that's the tough thing about, especially using ingredients like hops and everything. Everything varies to a degree.
Yeah, everything varies year to year. And yeah, I mean, that kind of gives you a little bit of uniqueness each year with something like the Venitucci Ale
it's going to be different.
I really loved it this year, and this year was like, oh, that's a little bit different, but it's all right. But
for me, I always like it better aged about a year.
Yeah.
Because no matter what if it tastes like they were heavier handed on the spices because the pumpkins didn't balance it, it always mellows down, and I think it tastes a little better.
True.
They really need to, I really want them to do a barrel-aged version, though.
That'd be awesome.
And bottle that. Like, bottle this really, like, heavy, like, sort of like a Rumpkin type thing, mm-hmm. like that Avery did. That was, that pumpkin beer is one where I've gone like, wow, this is a really good pumpkin beer.
And that's when I'll drink, because it's got so much going on, so much complexity. I mean, yeah, you get that pumpkin spice thing out of it, but it's not the first thing, because it's, you know, super boozy and all, you know, all sorts of other things going on. So it's a really complex beer to sit and digest.
Yeah. So we'll see. Bristol just got I think they just got a new canning system, I believe. Either a new canning or a new bottling system. I know they got something new over their facility. And that helped, because they moved distribution over to RMC.
Yeah.
So they're no longer doing their own distribution company. Yeah. Which, instead of having to hold a bunch of beer in their warehouse, they now can move it to the other warehouse. So I'm going to get some more of that, because that's really freaking good.
Yeah, that IPA is excellent. Speaking of IPAs, I'm going to do a little shameless promotion here. on tap now at Fossil and Cerberus is One Josh Short of a Six-Pack, which is a dragon fruit IPA that we brewed in collaboration with Verboten Brewing. Actually, it was brewed on site in Verboten, at Verboten in Loveland. There we go. And then they brought kegs down here. Well, actually, the breweries took kegs up there, filled them, and brought them back. So Fossil has it on tap. Cerberus has it on tap. And then, of course, it was available at Verboten. And there was one keg that ended up at First Draft in Denver during GABF. And I have not tried the beer yet. I have not had a chance.
I meant to go over to Cerberus for the release, and I
to get to any of the places to try it. So I'm going to rectify that sometime this weekend, get down to Cerberus and get a crowler or two to
take
home.
This is Josh Juice 2.0.
Nobody likes calling it that, but sure.
Dane and I call it that. None of the Joshes want to call it that.
Carrie loves calling it that. My buddy Brandon likes calling it that. I'm like, that's just poor marketing. Nobody wants that. But yeah, it turned out really good. In fact, my brother, who lives up in Arvada, got a crowler of it because one of his coworkers came down here and got it from Cerberus.
Oh, wow.
So he had it last night. He said it was good. Pretty much everyone I've talked to said it was good, so I definitely need to go try it myself. And my 3-year-old nephew, this morning, when he saw the empty
crowler...
He tried
crowler, it
too? No. When he saw the empty crowler, he decided that the dog needed a name on the Cerberus crowler. And so he said that dog's name is Mrs. Gruff. So, Cerberus, if you haven't named the dog on your crowler, my nephew suggests Mrs. Gruff.
That's a good one. Well, speaking of collaborations, you guys actually have been part of a bunch of collaborations with Cerberus and Brass here in town.
Yeah, we've done a couple together, for sure.
Are there any more in the pipeline?
Wasn't there a recent
one? We haven't
one?
Gotten together and had beers for a while, so...
That's usually what happens.
That's usually when it happens.
I mean, other than the IPL, there's been a recent collaboration that you guys did, right? Was that just with Cerberus, or...?
What did we do? Well, I did one with Fossil, which was a...
maybe that's what I was thinking of.
What do you call it? Session IPA.
Okay.
And what else? I did say Brass last year.
I think that was the one, because...
I think that's the one you're probably thinking.
Because Mater was talking about it as we were going up to Loveland.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, that's the last one I think we did. The IPL was that probably was, the best one we did.
That was awesome.
That was fantastic. I love that beer.
I had it on tap at Brass is where I was drinking it. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those beers that's just it's tasty because it was lagered, it's just really like clean, and you just get the hops coming straight through it.
Yeah, a lot of people were confused because it was still so hazy. It's like, yeah. Well, I mean, overall there were 6 pounds of hops per barrel in that.
Oh yeah,
over the entire brew length, but it's. yeah, so there was a lot of vegetable matter flowing around in that beer, but. But it was a fun beer to make. We had a good time. So
for collaborations, do you use that as just sort of a creative outlet for things that you don't get to do at your own brewery?
Yeah. I'm going to do this again. I'm going to do a Goza again, because now that we have the T-Gap location, it's a different the crowd has a different palate.
Different clientele.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that you get out at Peterson. And so when we did the GOSA with Cerberus last year, you know, Josh was out before I'd finished a keg. And so this year, I think we can go ahead and put another GOSA out and do, and it'll sell at TGAP, where it wouldn't sell necessarily at Peterson. So yeah. I think it's going to be good for me to be able to do some stuff that I've wanted to do.
That was actually my next question, is if you were going to do special beers just for Taproom only.
Yeah, I think we are, so just for there. And for both locations, I'm also, I hate to say it, but I'm thinking of doing a seltzer, so.
You know what, that
it's got to be.
Everyone's doing it.
It's
why
an
not?
Easy gluten-free option.
Yeah. It is. So.
And it's kind of a license to print money at the moment.
Really, it almost
is. I use
is.
That term a lot, but. You know, it's easy to make for the most part, and
it's cheaper than
want
IPA.
Them. Yeah,
I mean, IPAs used to be a good IPA used to be a way to just basically license to print money, and now nowadays, if you make a seltzer, I was talking to my friends who own Steamworks Brewing down in Durango.
Yeah,
and while I was there a couple weekends ago. They had a lemon lime one on. They're like, yeah, this one's okay. If we put a black cherry or a blackberry one on, it goes in like 2 days. 10 barrels of it gone in 2 days. It's just like, it just, people just drink it like crazy.
Yeah, that's insane.
And it's incredible. And I've had a lot of brewery-made seltzers, and I feel like some of them taste like vodka mixed with water, and those are not as good. But then there's other ones where they've done the work with the yeast, and they've done a really good job of keeping the yeast, the nutrients for the yeast up. And I think that's where the vodka ones is when they've stressed the yeast out.
Yeah.
And it gives them more of that fusel alcohol type flavors. I was talking to Jason over at Trinity, and he was just like, yeah, he's like, I talked to some other brewer friend of his that had done a bunch of them. He's like, I got all the notes on how to keep the yeast happy so that the whole time the beer actually, I mean, the seltzer actually tastes good.
Yeah.
Because that's the hardest thing, is it? I mean, just like beer, if you start with bad water, you're going to have a bad beer. Mm-hmm. If you got this weird sort of fusel alcohol-y flavor out of that fermentation, no matter how much flavor you throw in, it's not going to mask that base.
Right, it's kind of hard to hide that, yeah, big vodka. I like that.
So if you need tips, talk to Jason. He knows. He knows his stuff. His was great. He had a dark cherry one on that was just.
They just released a peach one yesterday.
Yeah,
say it was.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
Peaches and cream, maybe.
Peaches and cream. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and the one that Chase did over there at Metric was really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing, is if you can do it the right way, it will just sell like hotcakes.
Yeah.
So why not jump on the trend?
I had to laugh too when Chase had just made that thing, and he brought a keg of it to Bines and Brews, and he goes, "Here, try this and judge me harshly." I'm like, "This is actually really good, Chase. I don't know what you feel bad about. This is a good drink." So yeah, I know they sold through that.
Well, and if the TTB is going to be like, yeah, you don't need to use hops or malt in this, just use cane sugar. It's like,
why
cool.
wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you can use cane sugar necessarily. You can the one that Chase made was it was rice,
okay,
syrup.
Yeah, it has to be
and
a malt
dextrose.
Beverage.
I think it's got to be a grain derived sugar, but it doesn't have to be grain. So
right.
It can be corn sugar and rice sugar and
yeah. corn syrup if you wanted to.
Yeah, if you wanted to, maybe not. So
and there's Demerara syrup or sugar. I think is. Corn, is that corn? I think it's corn derived.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I'm
that
not
one.
Sure. There's a bunch of them, and so yeah, it's and it might that might also have something to do with the, you know, how the yeast does as well.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I know there's nothing nutritious in sugar for yeast, or anybody, but it's yeah. There you've got to make sure you've got your nutrients up, and fortunately, right now one of the yeast labs I know. They've got a nutrient pack that comes with a certain yeast that they're selling for seltzers.
Awesome.
So I'm going to give that a try and see what happens with that. So
well, we'll look forward to seeing the Deuce's seltzer.
If you got some leftover strawberry rhubarb, I say just roll with it.
Maybe, yeah, we'll see.
That always sounds good. You got anything else?
No, this is going to be our first November without an All Colorado Beer Festival.
Oh yeah,
which is unfortunate. But yeah, we're kind of, you know, at the end of festival season.
It's hibernation time.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, bust out all your barrel-aged beers and stay at home and get fat.
look for all the seltzers that are out there.
Yeah, drink your yeah. pastry stouts at your peril, fellas and ladies. There's not much to speak of in the way of events coming up. Learn to Homebrew Day is November 2nd.
That's probably the only event coming up.
Pretty much. There's a Brew Brothers event for that at Rock Bottom out on Powers.
Not Pike's Peak.
No, we use them for Big Brew.
Oh, that's Big Brew. That's great.
So Learn to Homebrew Day, which is November 2nd, that's going to happen out at
Rock Bottom.
At Rock Bottom.
Yeah. Fun.
So, that's really the only thing on the radar. And then, of course, January, we've got Big Beers coming up. And that's you know, still 2-3 months away, basically. But that's the next big milestone to speak of. From a craft beer standpoint.
That'd be a great place to do a double knuckle dragger at.
There we go.
Wonder who we need to talk to for that.
Who would you talk to about that?
I don't know.
That's weird.
We'll call Rich. It'd be like, hey, Rich, here's this great festival.
No, I definitely want to go to that. I think the barley wine I have would do real well. It'll be 2 years in January.
Nice.
That it's been aging.
What's it in right now?
It came out of the oak a while back. It's just been in kegs, mellowing out. So
was it a little crazy when it?
It was a little oaky when it came out because I didn't do it. Either did it too long or not long enough.
Right. It was between those cycles.
It was like one of those. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was at the really oaky right now. So
just let it settle.
But I think it tastes great. It's on tap at TGAP.
Oh, nice!
Right now, so
great spot to be able to put fun things on.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, give our listeners just a little bit of a idea of where to get Deuce's Wild Beer.
You can find it. We're around town in a couple places.
Okay.
We're at Colorado Craft down here on Tejon. We have a Basil and Barley has 8 of our beers on tap all the time.
And that's up off Basil, Briargate Parkway?
It's off Briargate, yeah.
Yeah.
And a few places up north towards InterQuest. I forget what they are. Also, you can get it at 660 Peterson Road, which is right off the north gate of Peterson Air Force Base. That's our brewery and tap room. And then I think it's 3325 Templeton Gap. Our tap room.
The old 1876.
The old 1876, exactly. So.
You gotta do like an 1876 pills there or something just to
there you go.
Commemorate it. Make about like 1 gallon of it and then.
Why are you out of it?
No, that's too bad. Well, Jeff, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, cheers.
Yeah, thanks so much. Cheers, all.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Focus on the Beer is recorded at R&D Studios in Colorado Springs, Colorado. For more information about past shows or to submit a topic for a future show, head to focusonthebeer.com.